actually pretty surprising because it's, as much as we're familiar with the concept of simcha, is the degree to which the irony in how it's presented can be really striking. The Gemara says in Tainus, "Kishem shemich mishenechnas av mematim b'simcha, kach mishenechnas adar marbim b'simcha." That's the Gemara in Tainus Daf Chav Tes. In the same way that when Av comes, the month of Av comes, we reduce our simcha, we roll back our joy. It's a difficult time of the year. It's tragedies. Beis Hamikdash, we're feeling those tragedies even today. So too, when the month of Adar comes in, you're supposed to be happy. Av and Adar, you know, put them in the same sentence? It's almost like it's a stira, it's an oxymoron. How could you possibly learn anything from the saddest month that'll teach you how to celebrate in the most euphoric month, right? That's Adar is the happiest month of the whole year. You guys ever read Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities? Yeah? It's about the French Revolution. So it has a famous opening. It says it was the best of times and it was the worst of times, right? You have two different cities, Tale of Two Cities. You have Shushan, everyone is celebrating. It's a salvation of Klal Yisrael. And you have Yerushalayim, where we're mamish mourning the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. That's the month of Av, and the month of Adar is celebration of Purim. How could the two possibly go together? That's the Shaila. What can you possibly learn from Av? You wouldn't want your Tisha B'Av to look like a Purim. You wouldn't want your Purim to look like a Tisha B'Av. Okay. So you're saying that there's extremes.
Av is the saddest, and the same way Adar is happy.
So the same way I'm supposed to get as sad as I possibly can during Av, I should get as happy as I possibly can during Adar. Okay? Very nice pshat. It's a very nice pshat. It's interesting that the Lashon of the Gemara is Kishem Shemishenechnas. Kishem, right? Whenever you find a Kishem in the Rambam, in Ibn Medayik, in the Lashon of Chazal, to compare two things, it's not a casual connection. It usually means something very deliberate and very fundamental that's stringing the two sides of the spectrum together. So I hear what you're saying, Izzy. Can't reject it. There's a lot of truth to what you're saying. But I want to go a little bit deeper, right? Meaning where Easy saying correctly that if we want to demonstrate how far to go in either direction, so I need to know what my bookends are. You know, it suggests almost as if like what's something Pesach I shouldn't be as happy as I am on Purim. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa to be happy on the Shalosh Regalim. Maybe Rosh Hashanah also, right? There's an element of simcha and also. So you're saying Purim, it's a chiddush, right? You're saying that there's a mitzvah simcha on Purim that maybe requires me to be even happier than I am on V'samachta V'chagecha. So you'll tell me, okay, there's a mitzvah of Mishta V'simcha on Purim, I'm supposed to get drunk. I'm not sure that being drunk, if there's taka mitzvah to be drunk, it makes you more happy, right? It's interesting that there's a mitzvah of V'samachta V'chagecha, which the Gemara does say, in Simcha El B'yayin, right? You should have a little, you have a Revius Yayin to go together with your Yantav Suda, with your Kiddush, on the Shalosh Regalim. There's no mitzvah to get drunk on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, right? So maybe that indicates that being drunk is not purely about simcha. It doesn't necessarily make you happier to be drunk. It brings about other outcomes, but it's not necessarily about simcha. So I'm just a ha'ar on your point.
What's that? Supposed to have wine in Sukkot every day or something?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. There is a mitzvah to drink wine on Yontif, Ein Simcha El B'Yayin, but there's no mitzvah to get drunk. That's what I'm trying to say. That the mitzvah of simcha, when the Torah defines simcha for us, it includes meat, includes wine, karbanos, but it doesn't require getting drunk. Okay? On the contrary, you could argue that when I'm drunk, I'm not actually fulfilling any mitzvah, because at some point a person becomes so disconnected from his consciousness that he's not in fulfillment of anything anymore. Right? That's a longer discussion. Right? Whether or not, let's say a person drinks so much and they fall asleep. So can you still be in fulfillment of anything when you're asleep? It's a question. What's that?
You don't know the difference.
Right, but maybe that requires you to be in a state of consciousness, right?
No,
there's a famous. Right. So that means that if you understand it like that, the pshat is that the sheer of how much to drink on Yontif it's Revius, okay? On Purim it's until it brings on a sleepiness that I now want to put my head down as a result of, you know, the way I respond to the wine, right? But you're right. There is a notion of being completely unaware of my surroundings, and that's one way to take ad l'yada. Definitely not advocating that. But the Moshma Davardome, we spoke about this once. There is a famous shiloh. What if you have a few people who are sharing a sukkah and they want to sleep in the sukkah, but there's not enough room for everybody to lie down in the sukkah. So what do you do? Let one guy fall asleep in the sukkah, and then you pull his mattress out, because once he's asleep anymore, or once he's asleep, he's not in the midst of sleeping in the sukkah anymore, bring someone else in to take his place, right? Okay, it's a nice chap. That's what from Zalman Orbach suggested that. Again, predicated on this notion that when you're asleep, you're not actually fulfilling anything. Do I get a mitzvah of Zachar as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, remembering the day of Shabbos to sanctify when I'm asleep at night, right? I think Reb Nevinson quotes that as a nafkamina on a Purim Mishulash, when you eat your Suda, like last year. You have your Suda on a Friday afternoon, right? So if I fall asleep into Shabbos, so maybe I missed out on the mitzvos that apply when Shabbos begins, right? Because if I'm out of it, if I'm not aware of my existence, and I'm fast asleep, so maybe you don't. Okay, so another time. Let's get back to Kishem Shemishenichnas Av Mematim Besimcha Kach Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. Okay, the pshat could be as follows. Okay, just it says in the Gemara Megill, you have to quote everything B'Shem Omro. We learn from Mordechai and Esther that Kolamevi Davar B'Shem Omro, Mevi Gula Olam. If you quote something in the name of the person who said it, that brings Gula Olam. That brings redemption because it was Esther who quoted Mordechai. She said to Achashverosh when she went to save his life, in the plot against Achashverosh's life, she quoted, said this came from Mordechai. This information came from Mordechai. So the Gemara Tainis is actually Amar Rav Yehuda Brei Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Mishmei Derav Kishem Shemish Nechnas Av Mematam Misimcha Kach Mishen Nechnas Adar Marv Misimcha. So this comes from Rav Yehuda, the son of Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, in the name of Rav. So let's take a look at it as follows. We'll say it's very interesting when you think about what happens in the summer months. The summer months, so the 3 weeks, the 9 days, and Tisha B'Av. There's supposed to be a time when our behavior reflects the grief, reflects the mourning. Yeah, you with me? About how we're supposed to feel when we're thinking about the Churban. But at the same time, despite the fact that we're observing a certain form of Avelis in the summer, it really does not match up whatsoever to the structure of Avelis that we're accustomed to. Because if Chas Hashem, a person loses a relative, right? So what happens? The most intense form of mourning is immediate, right? The Shiva begins with very heavy restrictions, right? Very heavy mourning. It gradually eases up as you move towards the Shloshim. After 11 months, the mourner's not saying Kaddish anymore. 12 months, the whole thing's over, right? It's probably the healthiest thing. Chazal tell us, and psychologists tell us, it dissipates over time, right? If we held on to the immediate feelings of pain that we have at the time we were initially hit with that suffering, forever, that would be very damaging for us. So the most intense Avela starts at the beginning, but then it slowly dissipates. What happens, Rabosai, in the summer? Is that what happens in the summertime? It's almost the opposite. In the summertime, what do we start with? We start with the 3 weeks, very limited restrictions. You don't listen to music. Okay, but that's pretty much all that happens. Some people don't make a shachiyonu, the Ramah brings down, but 3 weeks begin, there's really not, you don't take your haircut, fine, but it's very, very limited. Very, very limited. You get to 9 days, it is more intense. But it's only the very last day. Mamish at the end of the whole thing. Tisha B'Av is the last day of that whole series of days and weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av where we have those similarities to Shiva. We sit on the floor, we don't learn Torah, we don't greet people the same way, right? So why is it that it's precisely the reverse? If the Avelus of Av is supposed to be somehow mirroring the way we respond to tragedy, then why doesn't it? It mirrors it in the sense that you get the reverse process. It starts light and gets heavier rather than starting heavier and dissipating. You hear the kasha? Salvechi gave a very simple explanation. Once you hear it, it's partial that this is what Chazal had in mind. When someone experiences a loss, God forbid, of a family member, so it hits them like a ton of bricks, right? The impact they feel is immediate, and it takes its toll on the person. So their response is of course going to be the most direct and the most poignant because they're experiencing the suffering right then. Over time, it's not going to maintain the same impact, and things will wear off. But when it comes to the Churban is distant from us. We don't feel it in the same way. I'll tell you a story. I had a cousin. My brother, when he was learning at Israel, used to visit Rabbi Nachum Parsh. Anyone know Rabbi Nachum Parsh? He was one of the leaders of Yerushalayim. My mother's family is Yerushalmi, Yishalmi blood going back many generations, maybe 7 or 8 generations at least, a couple hundred years, and he was a member of the Knesset. And the family owned a hotel in Yerushalayim. He used to go to the hotel and eat with the family on Shabbos. He told him a story when he was a little boy. His grandfather once came into the room and he saw his grandfather sitting on the floor crying when he was a kid. And he said, Zaidi, what's the matter? What's wrong? Why are you crying? And it was Tisha B'Av morning. And his grandfather told him, the Beis HaMikdash is burning. And he said it in a way which was so powerful and so, you know, from his heart, that as a kid, he ran over to the window, you know, and was looking for the smoke. Where's the fire? Where's this Beis HaMikdash burning? Because it was so real for him. But we don't feel that. Most people can identify. It's not the same. So as a result, halacha has to ease us in to the feeling, the churban, because you can't just jump into the avelos of the churban. It's something that if you gear up for it, it's something that if you gradually go through a process of working towards Tisha B'Av, then by the time Tisha B'Av comes along, 3 weeks, 9 days, and then Tisha B'Av itself, then you'll be ready for it when it comes. But there's no way that we could just say, okay, tomorrow's Tisha B'Av, and you'll be able to sit on the floor and feel it. We have hard enough time even when we have those 3 weeks to work up to it, right? Because we're doing all kinds of other things. You know, usually in camps, okay, so you can't listen to music. So instead, we're going to take you to 3 different amusement parks and water parks. And, like, you know, we're going to do everything we can to entertain you and keep you busy, because we can't go swimming, right? You know, so during the 9 days, but it just makes it harder and harder to focus on what's really going on during those days. But if we didn't gradually work up to it, we have no chance of experiencing the sadness of the Churban. So that's why it works the way it does. So here's the Chabra we'll say. Maybe, Keshem Shemisha Nechnas Av Mematim Mesimcha, Kach Mishin Nechnas Adar Marbe Mesimcha, in the same way that you can't just jump into the Churban and the morning of Av, you also can't just jump into Purim. You can't just jump. You thought, well, hey, it's a happy day. What's the problem? I'm going to get dressed up. I'm going to put on my costume and I'm going to have my Suda and I'm going to do all the fun stuff about Purim. No. Chazal are telling us a secret that as easy as you think it is to just jump into the Simcha of Purim, that's a mistake. In the same way that you need to gear up to Tisha B'Av, kach mishenichnas adar marbe mesimcha, so too you need 2 weeks. If you want to experience Purim in its totality and really extract everything that the holiday has to offer, the only way to do that is to gear up for 2 weeks to get yourself there. Okay? You hear the comparison now? Now it's a whole different type of similarity from Av to Adar.
Did that apply to the other social?
Maybe not. But in order to address that, I got to answer the million-dollar question. Like, why not? Why can't I just jump into Purim, right? If it's such a happy day, then I thought, like, I need to... Right now, it's even more peculiar, because think about it like this, Rabbi Say. Something astounding emerges. If I would have asked you what the pshat, Benji, in Mishenechnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha is, you would answer me, oh, well, Purim is a super happy day, and it suddenly, like, explodes and goes beyond its borders so that the whole month is a happy month, right? And that's why you're supposed to have a court case during this month. If you have to set a court date with a non-Jew, you'll be more successful, hopefully, mazel of the month, right? So I thought, that the Simcha of Purim somehow expands the entire month. Nay, that's not the pshat. The pshat is that it's Adar that provides the ability to experience the Simcha of Purim, rather than Purim being the source of the Simcha on Adar. Yichab? It's Mamish B'Nafochu. Mamish B'Nafochu. I thought that Purim is the source of Simcha on Adar, when in reality what we're saying is, no, you need Adar, the 2 weeks of the month, to gear up to be happy by the time you get to Purim. What is a pshat? Why do I need that hachana? Why do I need that preparation? Why do I need to start the singing and dancing now, 2 weeks in advance of Purim? So this is the answer, Rabbi Say. Ready? The Megillah, and the whole story of Purim, has so many lessons to take from it. I want to zero in on one of them. The reason why there is so much intrigue and twist in the plot is because if you open the Megillah, as we said, we're doing it every day, the whole story, in a matter of a few chapters, goes from tragic to ecstatic. Klal Yisrael being on the verge of annihilation to being on the top of the world. The Megillah says that everyone wanted to join Klal Yisrael. They all became the biggest Jew fans. That's what it says. They were misyahadim. They become fans of the Yehudim. That's what the Pasuk says. Some of them send that to mean that they all wanted to convert. Right? From about to be about to being destroyed to being at the top of the world.
Top dog.
So, all that happens in a few short chapters. The reason why it becomes such a fascinating story is because it's only at the end of those chapters that we look back and we see that Hashem had planted the solution to all of Haman's threats in subtle, unrecognizable ways that only come to light much later. Rav Yosef Rimon, you guys know Rav Rimon? You've heard of him?
Yep.
So he's from the Gush. So he wrote a number of Svarim. Recently he wrote a Sefer on Purim a couple years ago. And he has one little section there where he counts 20 different details, 20 details of Megillah that when they are shared with us, make no sense. Make no sense in meaning that there's absolutely no reason why they're there. And it's only later do you see, when Hashem turns things around, how he was orchestrating those events and how those details were significant for the ultimate Yeshua. The best example of that is the story of Mordechai discovering the plot of Bigson and Seresh to kill Achashverosh. Right? It's a non-sequitur. If you look where it appears, right before, it says that Esther never gave away her background where she came from. Right afterwards, it says that Achashverosh promoted Haman to his new position of power. So before the story of Bigson and Seresh, no shaychus. After the story, no shaychus. And then a few pesukim in the middle where Mordechai discovered this plot, and like that's the last you hear of it until later in the Megillah. So when that detail is given to us, no idea, totally irrelevant what it's doing there. And later we realize that this becomes the event that turns the tables on Haman and his rise to power when it's recalled that Mordechai saved the life of the king, and Haman then becomes conscripted to honor Mordechai and pull him through the streets. You know, this is the person the king wants to honor. Chazal call this, keep in mind this phrase, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makdim Refu Lamaka. Hashem always preempts. He gives the refu, he gives the solution, he gives the remedy before he even provides the illness, before he brings around about the suffering. He already has a solution in mind. Haman, and the Gemara says, you know what the example of this is? Haman had to convince Achashverosh to go along with the plot to kill the Jews. How did he do that? How does any conniving, corrupt politician get his way? With a bribe, with money. So what do you have to give? You have to give an enormous amount of silver to Achashverosh to get him to sign on the dotted line, to get him to get the ring. Chazal tell us that Hashem, a thousand years before, gave the mitzvah of shkalim, required Klal Yisrael to give an enormous amount of silver. As a schus, those shkalim counteracted the plot of Haman. The mitzvah of shkalim, that is very closely connected to Adar, that's why we read shkalim, we read it just 2 days ago, because the mitzvah of shkalim begins at the beginning of the month of Adar, and that schus, long ago, was what provided the schus to counteract the plot of Haman. Right? And that's a pattern throughout history, right? That there's a silver lining. Maybe we can suggest, right? Why, everyone knows, right? Silver cloud has silver lining, right? Why isn't it a gold lining? Why isn't diamond lining? Why do we always say a silver lining? So maybe the pshat is over here, because the silver lining was the silver of the shkolim that was given that later turned out to be the schus that we only recognize at the end was what saved us, and the seeds were already planted long before. Yichap? So throughout history, we see that there's a silver lining that Hashem already put in place. We only discover what it means later. A few more minutes, guys. Okay, let's get practical now. Okay, it's very interesting that this is a lesson of Purim that we see from the story that later we'll be able to understand what Hashem had in mind the whole time. That's Shem Purim, right? Later we'll be able to see, but sometimes, as we said before, Mishal Shasharim, you feel like you can say that to a person, maybe. You can tell them, well, this is because of this, that's it. But we don't say that to people. If, God forbid, you know, somebody's undergoing suffering, you can't necessarily say to the person, oh, don't worry. There's, you know, Hashem's going to show you what's good about this now. It's hard for a person to accept that. A person's in pain. It's very difficult to process that. And it doesn't always make them feel better. It might make them feel worse. So we're not in the habit of telling people, don't worry, Hashem has a plan. Sometimes we can say it, but it's not always shaykh. So what are we supposed to do with that, right? If that's a takeaway of Purim, great. But if we can't use it, if we can't help people integrate that into their thinking, so, you know, what does it do for us? The answer is that you have to look forward. You have to look inward, inside yourself, to adopt that concept and to make it a part of your outlook on life when things are good. When a person has rosy, clear, and bright lenses, and they feel the hashgacha process, they feel the chesed of Hashem all over in their lives, and at that point look back and say, oh, you know what? You know what? Now I know why that happened to me, or why what I wanted didn't happen to me, and I appreciate it. I was at a wedding last night. I was at Josh Rosenberg's wedding last night, and I happened to bump into a rabbi who I hadn't seen in a long time, and he told me about a failed attempt that he's very successful. He's a very talented guy. And he did not get a certain position that he applied for in a very big shul. And obviously, he told me a great story. He said the people, you know, when they sent him the letter of rejection, they sent along with it a copy of a letter of rejection from a previous rabbinic search in that shul addressed to Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. To say to him, don't worry, you know, you did a good job. We're not going to take you, but we also didn't take Jonathan Sachs, you know, 30 years earlier, okay? So it was very nice and sensitive of them, okay, and it made him feel good. What's that? Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs, before he was a lord, okay? So he told me, you know, looking back 15 years later, maybe more, the best thing that happened was that he didn't get that job, right? But you're not going to realize that until later. I have 10 stories like that, and you guys have 10 stories like that also. But when things are good, right, you have to work on your emunah. My wife, Shabbat, used to say, you have to work on your emunah when things are good. When you feel Hashem's chesed, that's when you need to take the moment, look back at your life, and think about all the things that were crushing and difficult for you when they happened, and say, you know what? Now I see that there was a good reason for that. There must have been a good reason for that. Sometimes I recognize it now, sometimes I recognize it 5 years later, but Hashem's in control. There's a bumpy road that sometimes is the only path to get back to the highway. I need to get through the rough in order to get to the clearing, you know, and get back on the fairway. That's how it works. But you have to be able to take snapshots of what you're looking at when you have that clarity, so that when things are not so clear, you can recall that perspective and that snapshot where you got it, where you felt Hashem's hashgacha, and when you encounter those difficult times, say, you know what? Just like I saw what God had in mind then, I can have the patience to see it right now. And there's one so glaring example of that in the Megillah that I believe is the most dramatic line in the entire story. Mordechai and Esther, back and forth, intense conversation. I should go, I shouldn't go, should go. I'm going to risk my life. Ahasuerus is not going to let me in. And you know what Mordechai says to her? Mi yodea imla eis kazosi gat lamalchus. Who knows if this whole enterprise, as much as you fought and didn't want to be in this position right now, against all your efforts, you tried not to be chosen to be the queen, and nevertheless, they took you into the palace because perhaps Hashem had precisely this opportunity in mind to save the entire Jewish people. Maybe that's the whole reason you're here right now. Open your eyes to see that. And Esther has this aha moment to say, you know what, you're right. I didn't realize that. Everything about my life, which was when I was a little Beis Yaakov girl, the last thing I was thinking was that I was going to end up being the queen of Persia, right? Maybe Hashem had a plan. Maybe even in the midst of this treacherous moment where I don't know what is going to happen, I can look back and say, this is what it was all intended for. And they took us, and we have to take a snapshot from that moment of Esther and Mordechai saying, "This, there's a reason for this. There's a reason for this difficulty," and conjure that up in our minds when life is tough, and say, "Clearly, Hashem has a plan. I don't know when I'm going to find out what it is, but only if we work on that, only if we reinforce that in our kishkas, again and again. No one else is going to be able to tell us that when we're going through that, because you don't say that to a person." But only because I put that in my kishkas, I'll be able to reach inside with strength and emunah and fortitude to say, there's a silver lining and Hashem has something in store. And that, Rabosai, is what the shkolim are about. Like we said earlier, we're giving shkolim this week. Rosh Chodesh Adar. We only have a zecher. Right now, we put in the $50. But when you put those $50 in, what you're saying is, the same way Klal Yisrael gave a half shekel, so that a thousand years later, they would be saved from Haman's silver, his shkolim. So too, everything that I go through, as difficult as it is, Hashem has a plan. There's something good about it. And that's the Misha Nichnas Adar Marbe Misimcha. If I can get happy, if I can feel infused with a positive attitude of all the good things in my life, to know that Hashem brought me to this point, which allows me, with that positive attitude, to look back at all the darker times and say, no, Hashem has something in store, and I'm celebrating that now, then by the time I get to Purim, I'll be able to read that line in the Megillah of Mio Deya Imla Is Kazos. Only with that happiness and joy of all the good things in life, I'll be able to read the Megillah saying that the takeaway is that the chesed that I feel in my existence, in all that Hashem does for me, that good, will inspire me to look at even the negative parts of life with a positive attitude. That's why we need to spend 2 weeks gearing up to Purim. Only if we spend the next 2 weeks happy, appreciating that Hashem has the best in mind for me, then I'll be able to take everything out of the Purim story. Then I'll be able to celebrate Purim with that lesson learned. I'll be able to read those words in the Megillah of Mi Yodea Imla Is Kazos Sikat L'Malchus. I'll be able to see all those aspects of the story where things didn't look good at the beginning or seemed irrelevant at the beginning, and later I realize how good they were, but I can only perceive that if I go the next 2 weeks increasing my simcha, when that simcha emerges from appreciation of the chesed that Hashem always deals with us and bestows upon us. So in the same way you got to gear up for Av, you got to gear up for Purim. To be able to finally get to Purim, putting those shkolim in the box, knowing how good Hashem is to us, and seeing how that's an underlying message in the Purim story. Should be zocha to build that amuna, not just build up the simcha of Purim, but to also extract from it the amuna that comes from the Purim story as well. Because that, when a person feels close to Hashem through his amuna, is truly the source of more simcha than any wine or any meat or anything like that physical could get him towards. Should be zocha, Rabbi said, this Purim and every Purim is Hashem.